Welcome to today's episode of the Declutter Hub podcast, your channel for super easy, no-nonsense advice on how to declutter and organise your home. Please welcome your hosts, professional organisers Ingrid Jansen and Leslie Spellman. Hello and welcome listeners to episode 96 of the Declutter Hub podcast. I'm Ingrid.
And I'm Leslie.
If you have clutter and want to sort it out, this is the show for you. In today's episode, Leslie and I are talking about decluttering a home after a bereavement. Now, decluttering a home after a bereavement is one of the hardest things to do. And everyone deals with their grief in different ways. Some people start to declutter because it will keep them busy and they've got something to do in a situation that is out of their control, while others can't even face it, sometimes after years. And there is no right or wrong way, is there, Leslie?
No, absolutely not. And I think, you know, we obviously in our day-to-day work, we work with people who have been bereaved all the time. And it's so hard. It's one of the hardest things for us to manage as well as professional organisers, isn't it? Because we need to be guided by them in terms of time scale. So there's different things that you need to do when you've lost someone. So there's the administrative things. And as you rightly said, a lot of people use that administration period, you know, that period just after someone's died where you have to change addresses and send death certificates off and close bank accounts and plan a funeral. All those kind of things are almost diversionary tactics, which, to be fair, do get a lot of people through, you know, the amount of people that say, I was glad to be busy because it stopped me from thinking about it too much and ruminating on it, which is a case in itself, whether that's a good thing, but that's certainly what a lot of people do. But that's the kind of thing that we can't avoid. We have to do that. That has got a time scale attached to it, hasn't it?
There are so many heightened emotions, what you have to deal with after bereavement, and decluttering is just one part of that big circle of things that needs to happen. But it is such a hard thing to do, and it's part of the process as well, but it's just, there's no right or wrong time, and everybody does everything in their own time scales, don't they?
Yeah, because it's different to declutter in your own house, because when you declutter your own house, there's a positive benefit that comes from that. You know that actually your home's going to operate better and things like that. But when you're decluttering, whether it's, you know, and you might may have lost somebody that's in your own house as well. So it's not just other people's houses. But when you're decluttering someone else's belongings, there's no positive that comes with that at all. It's a task that needs to be done. And so by its nature, it's very, very difficult to motivate yourself to do that. Now, in certain situations, there is a time scale involved in, let's call it standard decluttering, so decluttering of someone's belongings, because a house may need to be sold for an estate. And that brings with it a time scale, which is really, really tricky, because this will undoubtedly be, for most people, highly premature. They will not be ready to face those emotions with someone that's very dear to them. And the bottom line is, if you're the one that's sorting out belongings in someone's house, that's someone that was very close to you. And so people are not ready, but they're forced to do that too early than certainly I would normally suggest. So if people call me after a bereavement and say, I want you to come and help me sort things out, I try to push it back a little bit and say, are you absolutely ready? Do it in your own time. Because you shouldn't really make any rash decisions about anything when you're at this heightened state of grief.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and with a house sale and sorting out an estate, I think you've even got a little bit more time. I mean, if a house is rented, or for example, I mean, I'm from Holland, as most of our listeners know, if somebody lives in like an old person's home and passes away, that room needs to be cleared normally within a couple of days, because space is, you know, so valuable that they've got such a waiting list for other people to move in an old person's home. They really need that room back within days. Or if it's a rented property, you normally get maybe a couple of weeks grace, but then they want the new tenants to move in. So there's that, those time scales are even shorter. So you have to really move quickly, while sometimes people aren't ready for that at all.
And so that then brings with it the sort of standard scenario where people say, I'm not ready to go through these belongings and make decisions on them. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to put everything in a box. I'm going to bring it to my own house and I'm going to deal with it when I am ready. And then it sits in a room, sometimes for months, often for years. The amount of people that we work with that have still got things from people that they have lost in their homes, all boxed up in lofts, in rooms, taking over their own spaces. It happens a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Or it ends up in a storage unit somewhere, in a storage locker, because they can't have it in their own house because they need to create space first to be able to sort it. So it gets put in a storage locker somewhere. But at one point, it's like, when do you ever find the right time to start doing that job? The grief is sometimes still so close that it takes some people years, but sometimes they're going to end up having to empty that storage locker and then move everything to their own home and sort it through. And that's can be a very tricky process.
So we've got two scenarios here. Yes, we're dealing with administrative matters as a matter of course, and we have to deal with those on an ongoing basis. Or we may be forced into a short time scale if the house has got to be sold, or if a room or a house has got to be vacated because it's rented. And we then potentially have brought that stuff back to our own houses to sort out there. Or then, of course, we've got a situation where there is no time scale involved and we can do it at our own leisure or within an, let's call it an appropriate time scale or a longer time scale. So what do we do then, Ingrid? So we've got a little bit more time. How do we actually tackle someone's belongings? How do we go about that?
Oh, Leslie, I think you need to figure out what you think might be easier for you to start with. You know, if you know, for example, there's a lot of sentimental items that you know will be very special to you, that's not the starting point. I think you probably want to start with areas in the home or items of the person that might be easier for you to deal with. And that is different for everybody. So for one person, they might think to themselves, you know what? The clothes are not going to be difficult for me to do because there were maybe the clothes of my mom or dad. I don't have any special memories. I find probably the photo albums or the crockery or the special things more difficult. Then you probably want to start somewhere, like with clothes or in the kitchen or with food or things like that, which then makes it easier for you to deal with. And you kind of build it slowly, but surely you build it up.
So we certainly have worked in homes where someone has asked us to go in and clear the property of someone that has passed away. In the instance that I'm thinking about now, it was someone's mum. And they knew already that they weren't going to keep any of her, let's call them day-to-day belongings. So any of her clothes, any of the kitchen stuff, any of her books, that kind of thing. But they said to us at that time, these are the kind of things, once we get to jewelry and more sentimental things, keep those to one side and then we'll go through them together. So one of our colleagues a few years ago used the term sensitive house clearance, which I think it absolutely is. So it's not a house clearance from a house clearance company where they just come in and get rid of everything. This is having some professional organisers who understand the value of certain things in terms of their sentimentality to others and pull those things to one side, so that you can then look through them, but don't make you go through the very difficult process of touching item of clothing after clothing after clothing of your mum's, which just is very, very hard. And if you can take that bit out of the equation and outsource it to someone else, that's also something to think about. Now, a lot of people wouldn't be comfortable doing that and would want to tackle it themselves. I suppose it's going through there with a goal and saying, what do I want to achieve out of this? And what is truly special about my mum, my dad, my husband, my wife? It could be a child. It could be anybody. So what kinds of things do I feel that I'm actually going to want to keep to remind me of them, which is what it's all about? There may be things obviously of value in terms of, you know, household items that have got value as well. And that might be possible. So you really need to work out what your goal is and go in with a set goal. One of the other things that's really hard, obviously, is quite often when we're clearing a house out, particularly if it's a mum or dad, quite often the whole family's involved, and that brings with it a whole other raft of emotions and tensions and arguments sometimes. And that can be really tough because people got very different ideas about who should have what and what should go where and what should happen to the stuff. You know, people, we know more than anybody, people have got different relationships with stuff, and what's, you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure. And so to get a whole family of people together trying to do the clearance, let's call it, or sorting through the belongings, is also hugely traumatic as well. Or then you've got tensions because one person's left with it and the other people are not doing it. So it causes family tensions as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're completely right. I mean, everybody's got their different agenda and everybody has a different relationship with a person that's passed away. So for everyone, different items are important. And what you normally see is somebody taking charge, trying to juggle a lot of balls. And then the other people are like, but we want to be involved too. Or other people want to also be at the helm. And wow, then lots of things can go wrong. And I think it's really important to communicate really clearly with the people who are involved in the sorting through to go, okay, what's the common ground we can agree upon? What are the items that we all agree upon, for example, that can go and we need to find good homes for it, and where is it going to go? And what are the items that are more difficult and we need to maybe discuss at greater length? And of course, if you have a bit more time, that can be really, really helpful. On the other hand, sometimes families don't want to be involved at all and burden it all on one person to sort it all out. But then that person feels that they're constantly juggling the guilt of, am I doing the right thing with all this stuff? And then later can people say, yeah, but you never involved us. And it's like, but you never asked me to be involved. And it can get really, really tricky. So, you know, we know why this is hard, Leslie. And we know why we get calls. Yeah.
Even talking about it is stressful, you know, because of those raised emotions, it's so difficult. And as I said, because there's no positive end point, this is sad. This is it's really sad to dismantle someone's life, which is what you're effectively doing.
Yeah.
It's a job that needs to be done.
Yeah.
It's a job that can bring joy, you know, so it certainly can. It does have moments where you see things and have fond memories. And so, but it's about extracting the quality then from what's left behind to make sure that you can retain those memories long term. But the way that you feel 6 weeks after you've lost someone and the way that you feel 16 years after you've lost someone tends to be very, very different. And that's why we have to do this at a time that suits us. We can't do it on someone else's time scales. There's so many people as well who they feel as if they're under pressure to do something. People are like, it's time. You know, if a wife has lost her husband, there's sometimes pressure from friends, from family to say, it's time now. You need to take that. You need to get rid of his clothes or that kind of thing. And they feel under pressure from other people. But if you're not ready, you're not ready. There's no one way to do this. And you have to be completely ready. And as long as it's not stopping you from continuing on with what you need to do now in your home, then do it in your own time is what I say.
Yeah, for sure. I think grief has got so many different levels with different people. And some people, like, for example, we did the podcast with Julia, and she really quickly, after her husband passed away, wanted to clear something because all the stuff just clotted up her brain and she couldn't think clearly. And she was really ready quite quickly to clear some of the belongings in her house. But then she did a second phase a year later, and she did another phase another year later. So we did a really phased approach, but actually quite quickly after, and in the end, it was a good 3 or 4 months before we actually started working together. But she was in that frame of mind that she wanted to do it. Well, other people sometimes can't face it for years because it maybe was really a traumatic time or a lot of other things happened around that time, and it takes people a long time to be able to kind of almost sort those feelings in their head and in their heart and kind of go, I'm now, it's been 8 years, but now maybe I'm ready to take the first little step, or this stuff has been in this cupboard for 20 years and I feel for the first time I can open that cupboard and starting to look at this. And other people say after 3 months, you know what? I think I'm going to feel better if I start to do this now and do a little bit over time, but I don't want to put it away for years and know that it's there. This is definitely a case of not one size doesn't fit all, for sure.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Just my own experiences of grief as well. You know, you deal with it in your own way. You know, you really do deal with it in your own way, and consequently you have to deal with other people's things in the way that seems right to you. There's definitely no right or wrong way. Yeah. You know, and when you hear stories of things, as you said before, sometimes there's trauma in rooms, you know, rooms that people have to clear out. Something traumatic may have happened in that room and people are not even comfortable to go in the room. You know, so it's there's so many things at play. It's really, really, really hard. I mean, last week's podcast with Josephine, so for her aunt that had passed away and her dad that was downsizing, she then had to be involved in clearing the family home. So if you've not listened to last week's podcast, Josephine's one of our VIP members, and she's talking all the time, isn't she, about still managing her aunt's and her dad's stuff. So that's really useful, because she was very organized in the way that she did it and the way that she involved other family members, and certainly in the way that she involved her dad in the decision making as well. I think he had to downsize from a 5-bedroom to a 2-bedroom, which is a big downsize. And of course, when you downsize, and a lot of those decisions are taken away from you just because of space.
So yes, Leslie, episode 95 is absolutely brilliant to listen to. And it actually reminded me of the time when my mom started sorting through a lot of the belongings in her house, because at one point my dad was really, really ill, and he actually, we thought he wasn't going to make it. So I actually dropped everything and drove to Holland from London kind of overnight, because I thought he's not going to make it. And that time my mom was home a lot, and she always likes to keep being busy, and she actually used that time to sort through some of their lifelong possessions. And they don't even have a really full house, but she was like, him being so poorly, and she was herself not very well for a while, and it kind of almost, well, didn't confront her. My mother is a super practical person. She's always like, Ingrid, she's I don't know if she's, because she's Dutch or it's her personality, but she's like, yeah, we get born and at one point we pass away. That is life. She's so practical about it. So she was like, well, your father being so ill and me being so poorly has made me realize that we're actually all getting older now, and I want to sort through some of this stuff while I still have the time and I feel good about it, and I have the mental capacity and still have the body to carry and look through, and I can see everything properly. And she's done a lot of clearing out in her house, and I just let her be, because I thought, I'm grateful to her that she wanted to do that herself, not because I just think to myself, oh, it will be less work for me, because my sister and I are both very organized and we're going to take good care of it all at one point in the future when they do pass away. But I think to myself, I was really grateful for her that she had the time and the inclination to look through all of those belongings and to enjoy those moments and to figure out what was important. And she already gave, for example, she gave us some jewelry that belonged to my grandmother. She already gave some of it to me and to my sister, because she thought, I want to give that now and not later when you don't know anymore that it was important or that it was your grandmother's or something like that. So she's kind of, she's a bit ahead of the game. She's a bit ahead of the game.
And I think that's absolutely the ideal scenario, isn't it, at the moment, that if you feel brave enough, it's a tough conversation to have, but if you can be open and honest about the fact that, particularly if it's your parents, that there is an inevitability that at some point they will pass, and you can have those conversations now in advance of that to understand what kind of things in their home are really valuable, what are really special, what they would like each individual family member to have once they've passed. Those kind of things are going to make it so much easier for you to sort things out after they've gone. But it's not easy to have a conversation, because we don't want to confront the fact that that's going to happen, do we?
It was very interesting, because at that time when she was doing this, this whole book came out about Swedish death cleaning. And the lady wrote that apparently in Sweden, once people get into their 50s, they slowly but surely start to clear out their house. So when my mother started doing this, I kind of said to her, have you read this book? And she went, I've got no idea what you're talking about, but I think this is a very sensible thing to do. And I was like, well, yes, it is, Mom. Yes, it is. But I thought it triggered her. And maybe I thought she maybe read about it in the newspaper. But it's just something that she thought, I'm going to do this now because I've got the time. I want to do this. I don't want to leave Ingrid and her sister with all this stuff to go through. And it was just very, very, for me, I think it was just, I'm glad she did that. I'm really glad she did that.
I'm not going to lie. In your 50s, you've got to start doing that. I didn't realise you've got to start doing your 50s. That seems a tad premature. I know we never know when we're going to go, but I'm like, oh, really? I've got to start preparing already in my 50s. I was thinking it was in your sort of, you know, 70s or 80s, not in your 50s. That's like upsetting me no end now, but never mind. Just one other thing that I wanted to mention, actually, before we finish, was I've been going through all my sentimental stuff recently. And I'm now at the stage where I'm starting to read letters. And so this week, my mum passed away 15 years ago. And this week I gathered all of her letters together. And most of these letters come from when I was about 20, so 30 years ago, when I was kind of at university and abroad and things. So I've got a lot of letters. So I gathered them all together. And I thought, I want to read all my mum's letters together. And it's been really an interesting thing to do because you have your memories of what they were. And obviously it's 15 years since she's passed, but then that was a long time ago, even before that. But to read letters and to read the insights of someone's mind at that point is really interesting because there are things within it that you can't remember, you know, so it really does slot you straight back into that relationship that you had before, which in some ways is really, really lovely. But the one thing that it kind of highlighted to me, and I've not finished them yet, is that there's a potential for negative things to come from that. So if there was anything contentious or whatever, or where you fell out or anything like that, maybe those kind of things need to be left in the past. It's interesting, actually, because I had a conversation with my dad because he was around. And so I said, oh, you know, I've been reading all my mum's letters, and my dad is like super practical and things. And I just said, is it something that you, because there's obviously a lot of things in there about, oh, me and your dad are going to here this week and we've just done this. And I find it really interesting because it's almost like a chronicle of what people have been doing with their time. So I said to my dad, would you like to read the letters? And he thought about it and just said, do you know what? I really don't want to read them because I just want to retain the memories that I've got in the way that I've got them at the moment. So I think that's really interesting as well because, and that's more of a sentimental project, you know, because she passed away a long time ago and I'm just about getting around to looking at them now. Obviously, at the time, I decided I was going to keep them. And now this is this phased approach. Now I feel that I can let some go, but I am keeping quite a lot of them, to be fair. But we were talking, weren't we, before we came on about, certainly within the Swedish death cleaning idea, there's a suggestion that if you are preparing, if you're doing this kind of, it sounds a bit morbid. Well, it is certainly morbid. To prepare things for when you have passed, that you, if there is anything that you consider to be private, that you put them in a box and you mark it up to say, don't read this, this is my private stuff. You know what I mean? So you want to keep diaries and letters and things like that while you're alive, but you don't want anybody else to read them once you're gone. So that's interesting, isn't it? What do you think, Ingrid?
Talking about it has made me think that I've got a box up. I'm looking up. Our listeners can't see this, but I'm looking up to the cupboard next to me. In the top there, there's a box with some letters. And your sentimental items and your kind of sorting it through has made me think that I need to get this box down and have a look. I think I had a pen pal at some point, and there's cards in there, letters from when I was in America when I was young and when my mother used to write to me. And it's made me think, shall I take this down and have a look through? Because indeed, that's really personal stuff. I don't know if I would want anybody else to go through it. I don't think there's anything spectacular or something in it or something that's a deep hidden secret, but still, you know.
I think it's more, you know, what I picked up from my mum's letters was the kind of the interesting parts of the relationship and, you know, how she regarded me at that time in my early 20s. You know, it was just after I'd left home, so it was really like, we're really missing you. And, you know, and then you look back and, you know, I was probably a selfish teenager, basically. But now I look back and think, oh, you know, she's the age that I was now. And, you know, to send you I'm an only child, so to send your only child off to university is a huge wrench, you know, and to understand now what she was going through, whereas I probably didn't give it a second thought when I was 20. Do you know what I mean? And so it's things like that, really. So I think it's really interesting, but I think proceed with caution is what I would say, because, you know, I had a good relationship with my mum, but if there is anything contentious, maybe it's not a route that you want to go down. So those are the kind of things that you need to think about as well. And also this idea, you know, so I've been finding as well letters that Steve sent to me, and my son's like, oh, can I read them? I'm like, no, you cannot. No reading letters. I don't want my 17-year-old son having an insight into my 20-year-old, you know, brain with my boyfriend at the time. I'm like, no, I don't think you'll be reading any of those. Thank you very much. So quite a hard topic to discuss, but one that we were asked to discuss. So I hope that we've given a little bit of insight into what we would do. I think the conclusion is it's really hard and there's no right or wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah. Take your time. Do it at your own pace as much as you can. And hopefully somebody that can support you, can help you, and to go through it. And we really hope this podcast has given you some food for thought, and that you think to yourself, yeah, I want to think about this, and it's given me maybe also some validation of why I feel it's so hard, and nobody understands why it's so hard. So hopefully we've helped you with our podcast and our insight. So we really appreciate that you've listened to this episode, and we hope that the last week's episode, episode 95, was also good for you. And we'll also definitely put Julia Kirby's podcast in the show notes as well. And we've also got a checklist for if you need to move house, if you need to swap things around your house. So we'll put that in the show notes and add that on the website as well for you, if you would like to use that, if you need it. So thanks so much for taking the time to listen today. If you would like to get more handy tips and advice from Leslie and I, you can find us in lots of places. We have a fab supportive Facebook group called the Declutter Community, which is a great starting point. And we are on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook too, where you can find us at Declutter Hub. We'd love to see you there. Take a look at members.declutterhub.com to find out more about our VIP membership. If you don't want to miss the next episode, subscribe to the Declutter Hub podcast, and it will pop into your notifications each Friday. We've been asking for some reviews, which make a huge difference to us. So we hope that you've enjoyed today or any other podcast. We'd love for you to take a couple of minutes out of your day to leave us a review. So thanks so much for listening, and see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Declutter Hub podcast. Check out declutterhub.com for more inspiration, and don't forget to tune in next week. Thanks so much for listening to the Declutter Hub podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us in your podcast player so you don't miss an episode, and we'll see you next week.